Welcome back to Following Know It On, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 221, and we are in chapters 12 through 25 of The Sunlit Man. Paul, how are you?
Gorgeous. That's how I am.
I already knew that, but how are you?
Oh, Trevor, you flattered me. I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk about specifically Dawn Shards. We'll talk about that later. But I am very excited to talk about that with you guys.
Elliot?
I'm doing excellent, as usual. We're in the middle of a Cosmere Brandon Sanderson book. How can you not be good? I was going to say, though, I've struggled a little bit with our reading schedule on this book, which I never thought I would with one of these secret projects. They tend to read faster. This one, though, has not read faster. It has read incredibly slowly for me. Not because the writing style. I think the writing style lends itself to a quick read. It's just the density of little bits of information. I constantly have to stop, literally set the book down so I can go write out some notes, formulate my thoughts about it, and then pick the book back up. I can't get into like a flow and just crunch out three chapters in a sitting. It's like half a chapter in a sitting. It's crazy.
I'm going to add to that, Elliot. I kept writing on some of the chapters. I would write like my live reaction in our like patron Discord. And then I would like, because something would happen at the start of the chapter, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to like write this right now, or like write this down right now. And then like after half the chapter went by, something else would happen. I had to go back and I'd edit the message I'd already posted and add another paragraph to it or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I agree. There's so much. I feel like I was having, I was reading at a pretty breakneck pace. And I was like, I'm sure there are things I'm missing. I will also say, I know I'm going on too long about this now officially. I will also say, nothing wrong with this audiobook reader, but I really miss Michael. I miss him.
I got bad news for you.
It's different. It's not the same. And I'm having a hard time adjusting. It's a difficult transition for me. I've honestly been considering from here on reading the physical book rather than audiobooking it.
Well, I've already learned that he apparently pronounces one of the main characters' names wrong. So there's also that.
Rebecca. Well,
that's up for debate.
No.
All right. Let's roll intro. And then I believe we have a patron.
Big intro and patron. Elliot's not or Trevor wasn't giving me the cue, so I just had to jump in there and do it myself sometimes. Yes, we do have another patron this week. Very excited to announce a brand new surgeon. And we're chatting about this briefly before the episode. I think it's a very cool username here. So we're giving a special shout out to Zydren. I think that's pretty cool. It sounds like another dragon name. What we had Zysis last, book. Zydren, I feel like, isn't too far off and very cool. So very cool name. I don't know if that was inspired from some show or if that's original or some book. Who knows? But we appreciate the support. Nonetheless, very excited to always have another surgeon on board. Can't be too healthy.
Thank you, Zydren. I also appreciate that. Very cool username.
Yes, thank you.
All right, Elliot. 12 through 25, which apparently surprised both of you. Neither of you realized that we were going through 25 until I reminded you like yesterday. What happens?
Yeah, for some reason, 22 stuck in my brain. I don't know if I'm getting dyslexic in my old age, but yeah, I had to crunch read three chapters today, but they were very good chapters, and I learned a lot. So does Nomad. He learns a lot as well. In our chapters, I'm again going to skip quite a few of the things that happen. because we're going to talk about it. And a lot of it is like the information he's learning as he goes. So I'm going to try and just hit kind of the events of what happens here. They're trying to solve the problem of we don't have enough power and we're trying to escape the Cinder King. Nomad and Rebecca see a scout and they chase after him. Nomad takes him down, but very shortly after that, the Cinder King himself arrives and kind of presents himself to Nomad, and Nomad takes the bait, goes to his ship, and they have a chat. And Nomad learns a lot about the Cinder King, and Cinder King learns quite a bit about Nomad. Well, maybe. Turns out he already knew a fair bit about Roshar and World Hoppers and some of those kinds of things. Nomad maybe picks up on what the Cinder King's motives might be, which simply seems to be just that of a power-hungry tyrant. Wants to rule the world. Yeah, I guess. And yeah, so they do escape from the Cinder King and head back to the city of Beacon, although definitely come under attack by some of the Cinder team during that whole process. They do get back to the city of Beacon, though. They do manage to make it. They're still trying to solve the problems of what do we do. They decide that they're going to try and fly over some mountains to get away from the Cinder King. And these mountains are not that high, but just the physics of this planet make it rather difficult. And so Nomad has to design some new rocket propulsion to get their cities up. So we spend a couple of chapters with him trying to figure that out. And in that process, we meet the Chorus, which is a big aquarium full of souls who ramble about the past and manufacture complex machines out of raw material.
That was a good sentence you just said.
Yeah.
Out of context.
Yeah. And that's kind of... Oh, no. Other big point here. Nomad is also testing some science on Elegy, Rebecca's sister, and trying to figure out, can I draw out the corruption that is on your soul? He's got a slightly ulterior motive for this, in that he has his own corruption on his own soul in the form of his torment. And he's thinking, ooh, if I can cleanse this corrupted person's soul, can I do the same to myself? So helping the people, but also still trying to solve his own predicaments as we go. And that's kind of where we leave off by the end of chapter 25. They're still just trying to solve the technical problems of finding the Skadrian bunker or underground city, they hope, and also just simply trying to escape from the Cinder King.
Nice job, Elliot. All right, Paul. I've waited 2 weeks to tell you this. In the first episode of this book, you made some offhand comment about what if we could leave batteries around the world and then go around and pick them up. We could have a bunch of investiture. And then I said I was proud of you, which I was, and I still am. Little did you know, we had already seen that happening. The Cinder King ties his slaves down in chapter 1. They get ate up by the sun. And then in chapter 12 here, Rebecca gives Nomad a little bit of a lesson on sun hearts. So sun hearts apparently form after someone has died, and you can then store investiture in that sun heart. So as far as the economics go of this world, you were correct that they go around leaving these batteries around the world and then go and pick them up on the next day. But turns out they're people. Congratulations, I guess.
Yeah, smidge darker than I was hoping for.
Yeah.
I had in mind these revolutionary, you know, technological things. Instead, it's more depressy. you know, I leave it to the Threnodites here to
invent
a way to leave people behind and use their life essence as their power source, you know. Leave it to them. That adds up. This is interesting. I feel like it was pretty easy for Brandon to make this into a battery type scenario, like a futuristic whatever solar battery, you know, seems to add up and seems to be very achievable. This feels like it was a very intentional choice to make the scape of this planet much darker and cutthroat and dangerous, you know, like you don't want to be on this guy's bad side, you know.
Yeah.
Which is a bit interesting.
Elliot, talk to me about the ethics of leaving your ancestors behind to die so that you can power your city one more day.
Yeah. When we first learned about this, it wasn't immediately revealed that the good guys do this too. That kind of came a little bit later, and it was like, oh man, the villain, man, he's so power hungry and ethically bad that he takes his slaves and sacrifices them to the sun to get power. And then you learn later that the good guys do that too. And that's the only way that they can keep their city powered to run, is they have to take their elderly and any volunteers that will be willing to give up their lives to keep this rebellion going. Is very, very grim. I mean, they're just doing what they can to survive, right? Giving up your life so that your family members might have a few more days to live, that's honorable in a lot of ways. Definitely presents us with some problems. On one hand, it actually reminded me a little bit of Dune. In Dune, the desert people, help me remember what they're called. The Fremen?
The Fremen.
I don't know anything about Dune.
I remember the names of the groups, at least, because of a board game I have. That's all. Dune Imperium, great game.
Dune Imperium, yeah.
Yeah, I read Dune a while back. Not my favorite book by any stretch, but there's part of the desert like economics where water is so incredibly valuable. And they say things like, yes, when you die, I will take your water unto my own. And what they're talking about is literally like extracting all of the liquid out of a dead body and feeding it into their water supply and using it as this like recycling system of taking the dead bodies to sustain a population. Kind of reminded me of this.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a fair comparison. I want to ask y'all, in my mind's eye, while I'm reading this, there's not that many people on this planet. We've talked about, maybe is this a smaller planet?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because we had that conversation. I've pictured this as a smaller planet, and I've definitely pictured that there's not that many people here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't imagine it's a major Cosmere tourist destination either. I'm wondering, how is this sustainable? Is it really like how much? That's my question. Maybe there's probably way more people here than I've imagined, than I've pictured. But in my head, like, this is like your clock is probably ticking if you're sacrificing people to get a fill up on gasoline, you know?
Yeah.
to fill your car up to keep driving around the world, you know?
I also thought this, Paul, you're not alone, that I had the same thought right about here. I was like, okay, hold on. The numbers do not add up here. But something that Nomad learns in this episode, in these chapters, is the Cinder King has absorbed thousands of people, which auxiliary on this as a side note, it's like, oh, okay, hold up. If he's really has that many breaths in him, let alone Cinder Hearts or whatever, that guy's invested. You actually do need to be careful about that guy. So that already increased the number, like the population of this planet for me, because Nomad's surprised to hear that too, that he's absorbed thousands of people. Second, a charged Cinderheart, if you remember back to the first or to last episode, he absorbs it and gains, oh gosh, like 4,000 BEUs or something like that. No, not that many. 1,400 BEUs. So a normal breath would be one person, one breath. But on this planet, there's something weird going on, because one person dying shows up as 1,400 BEUs. That's a lot of energy. That's a lot of power. So yes, you do have to sacrifice people, but back to the arena scene from last episode, they're only sacrificing two or three people. And we don't know how often that is or whatever, but there's a lot of energy coming from one Sunheart. So I think this actually happens less often than you're thinking.
I think there's another fact going on here too, which I can't remember if this is spelled out specifically or if I'm jumping to conclusions on this. I don't think these people have been on this planet very long. They talk about this fleeing of the evil on their homeworld, which I think we're assuming is Threnody. They came straight here from Threnody.
Yeah.
They talk about that as if it's something many of them experienced. So I'm thinking we've only been on this planet for like a single generation, maybe less even. You know, tens of years.
I think you're incorrect. I do think it's been a couple generations, but your time frame's not too off. I think it's been maybe like 80 years.
But yes, as far as we know, I'm not seeing a cycle here. It seems like we have a finite resource, humans, and we're using them up to spend investiture on things like propulsion. So yes, that only ends one way. We run out of people.
Well, and for those who have read the book a while ago and don't remember, there's a key fact that Nomad jumps to that we haven't discussed yet. They can't recharge Cinderhearts. He makes the assumption, like, you know, any Rosharan would, why don't you just leave it out in the storm and let it recharge? And apparently you can't do that. So
I guess there would be one way to prevent this from ending badly, and that would be to repopulate your people faster than you're using them up, you know, generate a lot of offspring. But it does definitely seems like their style of civilization is not nearly settled enough to encourage that kind of thing. They're too busy killing each other and not settling down into stable society.
It is interesting, Elliot. I thought of that also. I'm like, surely you've got to be getting people from somewhere. There's no telling how long these people have been here. You know, I'm assuming they've been here at least a while. And I'm like, you know, we've seen some villain type figures running like breeding operations on Cell, of like trying to get Allomancers, trying to get Mistborn, whatever, all sorts of stuff like that. And so I would be surprised if our people, good or bad, are doing something like that. Even though it gets to be a bit morbid.
You just sparked a thought train that I don't know that I want to go down, but I'll take one or two steps and then we'll retreat quickly. The investiture-powered sunlight causes the plants to grow ridiculously fast. Is there some kind of effect on the humans as well? Are they going to age and develop quickly as well, which could play into your evil breeding program thing?
It could also play into the generation versus time span thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be a lot more generations than normal time frame.
But growing humans to power your batteries gets into the matrix real fast, and I don't know if I want to go down that ethical path. We'll see where we're headed.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily, that's not fully a prediction, because I don't think that's where our story is going to head. But I wouldn't be surprised, and the logical implications of sacrificing your people to power your machines every day in a 10-hour day.
Yeah.
You know, causes some questions, I guess. So it could be the case.
While we're talking about like the humans and the investiture and things like that, I had a thought actually I wanted to run past you guys. Nomad says, I think in a couple places, something weird is going on with the investiture and the people on this planet.
Yep.
He's trying to figure out like the investiture transfer thing. They touch each other and they instantly start to transfer investiture. But then that doesn't happen when anyone touches Nomad. We saw this at the very beginning. The Cinder King grabbed Nomad by the face and was going to just melt him right there, and nothing happens and everyone was shocked. And then later on, there's some nice awkward scenes with Rebecca where she doesn't want to touch him because it's super intimate and they try it anyway and nothing happens. He's trying to figure it out. But I thought about Nomad references this too. He thinks about Nalthus and breaths. And he goes, well, hold on a second. I've seen this before. This happens on Nalthus. We've got powerful beings who sustain themselves by sucking the investiture out of other people. But on Nalthus, the people don't die. Remember back to Warbreaker? Everyone's born with a breath, and you can give your breath up and still be alive. You lose some of your kind of identity, but you're still alive.
Did you catch the Nalthus joke?
Did
while he's talking about this?
One?
So
did he make one?
He makes one. So somebody calls him a deity, or it goes along with the Sunlit Man thing. And he makes an offhand comment that says, no, I'm not a god. I do productive things with my day.
As opposed to stare at art.
As opposed to the court of gods where they sit around and do nothing. That's your Nalthus joke.
Again, with the so many references buried in this book. But anyway, where I'm going with this is, so on Nalthus, you suck the investiture out of someone. You stole part of their life, but they're still alive. On Roshar, if you've got a Knight Radiant who's completely full of investiture and you whip out like, what's Cheery Cheery? The animal? It's a... why am I blanking on this? I just read the Oathbringer chapter where Cheery Cheery drains the King's Drop. Ah, why is this escaping me? Anyway, the little critter on Roshar that can suck all the Stormlight out of stuff doesn't leave people dead. You can suck all the Stormlight out of, I think this happens to Lyft and other people, and they're just fine afterwards. So why on
Larkin? Did you find it?
Thank you, Larkin.
I definitely didn't look it up.
I feel real dumb after that. We've done all this like Stormlight trivia, and I think that would have been an easy one, hypothetically. Apparently not.
But to see where I'm going, why on this planet does removing the investiture out of someone kill them? And the immediate answer that I thought about for that was, what if all of these people, all of them, are cognitive shadows?
What if nobody's actually alive?
Exactly. What if no one is alive?
What if
they all died on Threnody and somehow for some whatever reason ended up here? And they all run off of investiture and do weird things with investiture because they're all alive and dead start to have weird definitions in the Cosmere. But
especially after Yumi.
Yeah. What if they're all cognitive shadows or some other, what was the term, invested entity? Or
yeah.
What if they're all some weird on that scale of they're actually maybe dead and we're operating on where investiture is life for them?
Okay. Thoughts? Yes. Thoughts. First off, Elliot, I think that's very clever. And I had no, that was not in my head at all until you mentioned it. That is very fascinating, and I think there's a solid case for that. I'm trying to think. So one of my biggest questions we've had, which maybe this was already explained, maybe it got glossed over for me. We have our ember-hearted, ember-chested people. I don't remember the name for them. The Scorched, or whatever they're called. Something charred. Like that. The Charred. That's right. Not the Scorched. We have the Chard, and they have, like, their chest cavity is kind of vacant, and they have this, like, ember thing in them. The problem I've had with this whole time is I'm like, it makes no sense. How do you live? Like, how are you alive, you know, and functioning? And I don't know. I still have no answer for that unless, like I said, unless I missed something. Maybe I did. But I've been wrestling with how do some of these people exist and how does this work? And I'm like, maybe this would be more explained by no one's actually alive. Like, this is like a totally different ball game we're playing. We're playing more cognitive
back
realm problems than we're playing physical realm problems, you know?
Back to my Matrix reference. Just saying.
Ooh. Go ahead, and then I have something to add.
Oh, I wasn't going anywhere with that. I was just saying, oh,
okay.
Humans, batteries, no one's actually alive. Yeah.
We talked about where are we getting all these people if we're using them as power sources. Are we... Here's a crazy one for you. Are we in the beyond? Are we where people, as they go, where they go after they die?
Is Sigsel dead and he doesn't know it?
Oh.
Maybe so, yeah. I mean, it's possible. I don't know how Hoid would be here and then getting out or something, but, you know, maybe the truth is he is dead. Maybe that's the spoiler.
Or,
and we're here. And that would explain why people keep, potentially people would be showing up. You know, and I don't know what happens if you get sacrificed and die in the beyond. So probably not quite right, but
you get
that
you
is get very
the, you get sent to the great before and you start in the Pixar universe.
There we go.
Okay, Soul.
Yeah, see that's that's the connection to Earth we've been waiting for or something.
There you go. Know. Yeah.
Anyways, that kind of ruins my thoughts a bit, but I don't know. There's a lot of interesting things, and if that were the case, I would totally buy it. Like, I'd totally believe it. Maybe not that this is the, like, beyond that we see in some of our other short stories and things, like Secret History, stuff like that. I don't think that's where we are, but the fact that these may be cognitive shadows is very fascinating to me. Very interesting.
The only thing I'll say on this before you keep going is Brandon Sanderson has said that he will never confirm or deny what goes on in the beyond. The thought of an afterlife is too pivotal to certain characters that he's not going to tear apart their story one way or the other.
I think that's wise for him not to actually go into the beyond, because the question of an afterlife can completely reframe the morality of decisions made in this world.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think he won't ever go there because it could then create weird discussions and problems for, you know, are the heroes making ethical decisions kinds of things. That's just, my own thought on that.
Yeah, I do like your idea of thinking outside the physical realm box of is Sigsel in the cognitive realm and doesn't know it? Are these all spread running around? Like, has he lost track of what's exactly going on in his life? I don't know.
While we're talking realms, I want to throw a theory at you real fast that's tangentially similar to this. I have a thought about the sun. We know that the sun is blazing, completely scorching the entire planet, and it's got tons of investiture coming at it for some reason. Seems like an obvious answer to what is going on there would be something like perpendicularity run amok, where somebody opened a perpendicularity, messed it up somehow, and now we have this like raw dump of direct spiritual realm investiture just like flooding out directly onto this planet. Like, it's a sun, but it's also like a perpendicularity at the same time.
I have a question for you. What else is super invested here?
What else is super invested?
They've mentioned it. Or at least Nomad has made the assumption of it.
The sun hearts that just fill up with the stuff from the sun.
No. That I'm talking astronomical bodies. The sun and...
Well, so they think that some of the sun reflects off the rings.
Is the planet... the core of the planet?
The core. Oh,
yes.
The core of the planet they mention is super.
Nomad makes the assumption and confirms it with auxiliary that the sun is super invested. And then he also makes the assumption because of, Elliot, kind of what we talked about last week, the size of the planet, the gravity, the air pressure. There's something really weird going on here. Makes the assumption the core is super invested. Just something to think about as we move forward.
What if it's like two poles of a magnet? Like the sun is like the negative and the
go on.
The north end, and the core of this planet is like the south end. And so you just have like this constant flow of ridiculous amounts of investor trying to get from the sun to the core, and it's all just flowing one way. Like they're in the wrong spot. They're itty bitty little beings walking around on a giant magnet and getting pounded with the consequences of that.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about air pressure. They've mentioned a couple times, we can't get up mountains. We're hovering 30 feet off the ground across the planet here. We can't get up mountains. And Nomad comes up with the plan, okay, let's get over the mountains to run away from the Cinder King, and then we can figure out tomorrow's problem tomorrow. And they're like, yeah, but we can't survive if we go over mountains. We like pass out and die. And then Nomad turns back to him and says, oh, okay, how tall are these mountains? And they're like, oh, huge. They're like at least 1,000 feet. Okay. What's the catch here? So the catch is you run out of oxygen very, very fast on this planet, and we go through a little bit of aerospace engineering or what's the proper term, Elliot? Is aerospace engineering correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We have to build engines for space. Go ahead, Nomad.
Yeah, basically. I toyed with the idea of doing yet another Elliot's engineering explanation bit, but I don't even need to, because the book does it for me. It's all there in the book where he's talking through the process of what he's doing. So it's well explained.
Powering space flight on a steam engine.
Yeah.
Did y'all laugh whenever you read the 1,000-foot elevation was too high?
Yes.
I bet so. That made me laugh because I know you hear Colorado and you hear the 14ers and stuff.
Yeah.
And
well,
so I'm like,
even more specifically, I work at a mine, and from the bottom of the mine to the top of the mine is greater than 2,000 feet elevation. So I do that type of thing literally all day, every day. So yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. This made me laugh. I'm like, the only time you're not 1,000 feet above sea level or something, right, is like if you're at the sea, like,
yeah.
Other than that, you're at least that high off the ground, off the whatever elevation, I think. So I thought that was really, really funny. Nomad even makes a note. He's like, back home, if you will, like our home was 15,000 foot elevation, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought that was funny.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the atmosphere, the air pressure thing for a little bit, because something funky is going on there as well, because the planet, we just talked about it, has this invested core, which gives a very small planet still a respectable amount of gravitational pull. As far as I know, and I am not a physicist, do not know the details of this, but I think on Earth, the main force that keeps our atmosphere on Earth is the gravitational pull of Earth. Earth has a lot of pull. It can hold things like nitrogen and oxygen relatively close enough to it to keep a large enough concentration for there to be air around us. So if the planet still has the gravitational pull, the mass, why is it not holding an atmosphere around itself as well as it could have? Now, there are a million and one explanations for what could be going on here. The fact that it's the thermal stress that this planet is under is absolutely ridiculous. The fact that one whole half of the planet is molten lava the whole time has got to seriously have catastrophic effects on the atmosphere and the environment on the entire planet. So is the sun, whatever it is, like just baking off every essence of air that's not right next to the surface? Very possible. But something about this seems a little bit strange to me.
No comment. Actually, I will comment. If you, of all the questions that you bring up on this podcast, this book spends the time to think about them.
He had a doctor somebody help him write this book, so I'm excited about it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Dawn Shard in the room. We get a little bit of a lecture, a little bit more of what exactly happened with the Dawn Shard. Nomad talks, I think it's too auxiliary. He has a little bit of a confession moment. He says, I'm sorry. Auxiliary says it wasn't your fault. He talks about, hey, when I picked up the Dawn Shard, put a pin in that for a second, it immediately looked for a power source and ate auxiliary. Who wants to go first?
Yeah, no, this section like kind of drove me crazy for a little bit, because I was like, so much is being said and I still don't fully get it all, but this is exactly what I wanted to talk to y'all about. He mentions that he eats up auxiliary. I assume that is, this is an assumption I'm making, I assume that has something to do with, like, that's why he's almost surprised, I think, in our last episode, of, like, seeing auxiliary as a full, like, blade, mm-hmm. or things like that. Like, I'm like, I feel like the, I don't know if that's, we've seen like investiture drained from things, but auxiliary, I assume, is a spren, right? Like,
yes,
I assume auxiliary is a spren. I don't know if we've seen a spren be drained. Maybe we have. I don't think we have. So it's kind of hard for me to wrap my brain around that. I'm like, is it draining from the Nile bond or something like that? Who knows? Either way, the way that auxiliary can function or interact with Sigzil is different. It seems like it was hurt. Maybe it was kind of cut off a bit and is slowly built back up. I'm not sure, but we get a couple like interesting little rules. We know some of the things, like this Dawn Shard is the reason that he does these skips, or can do these skips, right?
Yep.
He can like absorb an investiture and things like that. We talked about absorbing investiture a little bit. It's also the reason that Nomad can't fight back. He can defend himself, but he can't like attack somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were some other things thrown in there as well. I don't know if y'all remember any of those.
The only other one I had in my notes from that same passage is, he mentions that he has a connection to all places at once, which I think we already touched on a little bit, maybe last episode, but apparently not enough connection to instantly give him like the language of the new place. But at some level, he's connected to everywhere. And that's talked about in specific reference to his torment, which came from the Dawn Shard.
Additionally, the biggest thing that stood out to me was that it's mentioned that, okay, I'm looking back at my notes that I wrote in the Discord for this. we learned that apparently the Dawn Shards were used to kill God, right? That's what they say. Yes. Used to kill God, who I assume is Ada Nalsium.
You would assume correct.
So I assume that is... This is like the first, I feel like, actual detail I've learned, like maybe hard fact, if you will, about the Shattering. Like, we know Hoid was at the Shattering, maybe. We know the Shattering happened. I feel like that's about it. Uh-huh. And this is like the Dawn Shards were involved or were used to kill Ada Nalsium. And that's a crazy, that's a huge reveal. Like, that's not what the kind of reveal I was expecting to get. I knew there'd be something neat in this book. I was not expecting this level of a reveal. You know, this is like Brandon dedicating the book to his fans, I guess. This is like the real thank you, I feel like. And I think that's really crazy. Also, Nomad says he gets this Dawn Shard from Hoid, right? Like, Hoid gives it to him.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that means that Hoid had been carrying it up until then. I don't know how, if you can, like, exchange. Or if they came across it and Hoid said, you need to take this. Anyways, I don't know which of those it is, but I want to know what y'all think.
Yeah, let me jump in there with some of my thoughts and what I'm taking away from some of this. Yes, Hoid involved for sure. Last episode, in the scene where Nomad and Hoid talk, they talk about the torment. And Nomad says, well, there's a section where Hoid basically tells him, like, oh, your torment, it's not so bad, you know, it's actually kind of a blessing. And Nomad goes, a blessing? What do you mean a blessing? And Hoid says, well, mine has always been a blessing, or something to that effect. And so, clearly straight up stating that Hoid has one of these torments as well, which, backing up a second, I think I've also concluded that I think it's important. Nomad does not have the Dawn Shard now. He had it in the past, and it's left him with, he talks about this like scar on my soul. So it's left him marked and corrupted, but he's not actively wielding it now.
Correct.
So, yes, same question you just asked, Paul. Did Hoid wield the same Dawn Shard, or did Hoid have another Dawn Shard? At what points in time has Hoid had said Dawn Shard? Is he wielding it at the time of other events we've seen him in? Is he post-wielding it in other times we've seen him and already has his torment? These are now the questions.
So one thing that I don't know is, do our different Dawn Shards, do they do similar things? Because we've seen that Hoid, a huge part of what makes Hoid Hoid is his, I would say, connection to everywhere in the Cosmere. You know, like, he shows up everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of things. I don't know for sure that he has a capital C connection to everything. I don't know if that's confirmed that it's like he has a connection to everything. We learned that this Dawn Shard that they're talking about, or that Nomad's talking about, is like, does give him a capital C connection to everywhere. So I don't know if that's the same. If so, that would totally add up in my head of he's going everywhere. It would be if he has some level of connection that's going to help him out a lot. That would also, the whole idea of absorbing investiture totally adds up. We've talked about Hoid kind of collecting the Infinity Stones, we've said, you know, getting his Mistborn orb, getting all sorts of stuff, becoming a Surgebinder. That totally adds up in my head of what you could do in this scenario with a Dawn Shard. That also adds up of how, I'm questioning this now, do we have other characters who utilize multiple magic systems, or is Hoid the only one that we've seen do that? That's my question. I thought of Zio using commands on Roshar, but he's not using surge binding. you know.
Do you count Allomancers using the door to feel their Allomancy?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Which, that's not the most, like, breaking thing in my head, because I've assumed that that would be possible up until now. But, yeah, this whole aspect of the Dawn Shards is really playing with my head quite a bit.
Okay. Cosmere 3.0. Here we go. You ready? We're going to talk about Hoid. And based off this chapter, where people have gone since last year with this chapter. We were just, it was revealed to us in the last two episodes, Hoid had a Dawn Shard at some point. Put a pin in that for a second. Mistborn secret history. Hoid shows up at the Well of Ascension, meets Kelsier, and punches him in the face. And Hoid talks to himself and says, "Oh, it's been a while since I've been able to do that. I guess it doesn't recognize you as alive." Okay. Same torment that Nomad has here. Predating Stormlight. That's important. Okay. His Mistborn is before Stormlight. Tracking with me so far? So, people have made the assumption that, okay, then Hoid probably had the Dawn Shard at the Shattering. That's when he had it and has since doesn't have it. Why does he not have it now? Because he has since bonded design. And he can't do that with a Dawn Shard, as we just proved. If you have a Spren and you pick up a Dawn Shard, it eats the Spren. Oopsies. Guess we didn't know that before Sigzil. So, Hoid had a Dawn Shard, pre-Mistborn, and then presumably handed it off to Sigzil at some point, and it ate Auxiliary. And the reason why we know it's the same Dawn Shard is because it's the same torment. Because the Dawn Shard is specifically opposed to all violence, and that's why it has the same torment. If you have that Dawn Shard, it is systemically opposed to violence. So it gives you the torment of you can't hurt anybody. Tracking?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, when Nomad picks up the Dawn Shard, it wounds Auxiliary near death, to near death, which would imply that Nomad did not abandon his oaths before Auxiliary dying. Because Auxiliary can still transform. He's still alive.
Right-ish.
He's still acting like an alive Spren. He's obviously very wounded. Very tragic, obviously. And has since been walking away from his oaths. Because of maybe this event that hurt his Spren, and now he no longer wants anything to do with Hoid, or maybe the Knights Radiant in general, maybe Roshar. Night Brigade. The Night Brigade are hunting the Dawn Shard. You guys caught that yet?
Yes.
And somehow they can track his connection to the Dawn Shard, and they're retracing their steps to Hoid. They're trying to go find Hoid, the Night Brigade, and they're going to go through. Actually, they're trying to find the Dawn Shard. But they're going to go through everybody who's grabbed it. And so right now they're hunting Nomad. Track all that?
I think it explicitly said at one point that because of Nomad's connection to the Dawn Shard, he knows where it is. Like he feels enough connection to it that he could tell you where it was if you tortured it out of him or whatever. So I kind of assume that's what the Night Brigade are going for, is they're trying to get their hands on him to get him to tell them, hey, I can feel it's on this planet, this place, this person.
And Nomad made the comment to Hoid and said, yeah, I saved your butt, but it wasn't convenient enough that I didn't go die. I'm alive keeping your secrets, and that's inconvenient for you. So Nomad knows all these things, is being hunted. He's one of the few people alive who knows where a Dawn Shard is and is therefore being hunted by the Night Brigade because they want it. Pick up our story. Tracking?
Yes, that puts so many pieces together in my brain. I greatly appreciate that.
You're welcome. So, Sigzil's on the run because of he grabbed a Dawn Shard at some point. And now here we are. And it accidentally killed his Spren.
It accidentally killed his Spren, which... Okay, let's go a couple directions with that. My first thought is powerful things that tend to suck up people and things around them immediately brings to mind Nightblood.
Yep.
Right? You draw Nightblood, it starts to consume you. But a couple things now going on here. One, in this specific instance, we're told that the whole, like, I can't attack people is because this Dawn Shard was opposed to all violence.
Yep.
And so it's the latent motives of that Dawn Shard that are stuck in Nomad and Hoid, apparently, from your reference of Mistborn Secret History, that he can't punch people. Which my immediate thought was, well, that rules out Nightblood. Because
it also disassembles your everybody's a cognitive shadow theory.
Who does it?
Unfortunately, because he can't punch people. And you can punch Kelsier.
Oh, but Hoid could punch the cognitive shadow Kelsier.
Sorry. There's a good
like
one.
That one.
Oh, that's true. I just realized.
Did like, oh, Darn. Okay. Anyway, Nightblood. We know that Nightblood is very fine with violence. It's kind
destroy
of
destroy evil.
So, if Nightblood is a Dawn Shard, it sure ain't the one that Hoid was wielding and Nomad wielded. But, Trevor, you started to get into this a little bit. Apparently, you can't have a Nahil bonded Spren and wield a Dawn Shard at the same time.
Yep. Which is why, if you remember back to Dawn Shard, they specifically tell... I can never remember her name.
Rissen,
not to bond a Spren. They specifically tell her that.
I was going to go there too.
Interesting.
We've got wielders of Nightblood on Roshar, namely Zeth. But now here, interesting point. Help me out here. Zeth is a Skybreaker. The Skybreakers have weird rules. I've been rereading Oathbringer and they go into this. You like don't bond your Spren to start as a Skybreaker. Has Zeth made it far enough to bond a Spren that we've seen?
He does have a Spren.
I think so. I remember there being a Spren involved.
He has a little star looking.
It's like a Spren. Snowflake or something, isn't it?
It's like they describe it as like a Terran reality, and you can see like the cosmos behind, like you can see like the Milky Way behind it or whatever.
I remember it was a really cool description, but I guess I didn't remember it that well.
But he does have a Spren by the end of Rhythm of War because he tells it what his fourth ideal will be, which is go cleanse Shinnevar, and they run off to go cleanse Shinnevar.
Right. So putting 3 and 6 and 29 together, I think we might be able to conclude that Nightblood is not a Dawn Shard.
Either that or Nightblood is the vessel of the Dawn Shard and not the Dawn Shard itself.
That's like, something I've thought of because in my head, I given what we've read of the book Dawn Shard, I think our Dawn Shards aren't a physical object that you wield.
Right.
It's like a immaterial object, a cognitive thing or something like that.
Correct.
Maybe spiritual technically, I don't remember. Either way, something like that. So in my head, that's what is really like, that was my first thought that ruled out Nightblood as being a Dawn Shard. However, I could see that maybe Nightblood is somehow the vessel of a Dawn Shard.
So, if we're playing semantics, could you touch Rissen while having a Spren? would answer the question, right?
Right.
Like, could you shake hands with Rissen being a Knight Radiant and lose your spren?
Yeah.
That would
I assume
the,
you could.
I would assume you could as well.
In my brain, I assume you could. This more than anything has made me very curious to see Rissen again, because it sounds like our Dawn Shards have different rules. And right. I desperately want to know another one of these rules, because I'm assuming that that is a different Dawn Shard than what we are seeing here for sure.
Do you remember what Rissen's Dawn Shard is?
No. It's been quite a minute since we've read that.
It has been a minute.
So
when she picks it up, she sees a mural of like the sun or something. And then it says, change. There you go. That's all we know.
Nice.
And apparently Hoyt and Nomads was pacifism?
Apparently.
Skipping around. Yeah.
Okay. So I think after all that, you guys talked me back off the ledge, and now Nightblood still could be a Dawn Shard, is what we're saying? Or Nightblood is the host adjacent. Of a Dawn Shard.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yes.
Feasibly. Yeah.
Okay.
He's not ruled out.
Okay. Yep. I'm with it.
Okay. Now, all that being said, Hoyd and Sigzil have the same torment here. Sigzil's trying to cure it by the end of this episode. He's thinking to himself, okay, so let's play with Investiture. I've got this torment and I've got auxiliary. Torment burned auxiliary. What if I used Investiture to burn the torment? So then he goes over to Elegy, who's his patient number one because she's basically dead. And he's like, all right, we're going to try to siphon off some of your Investiture to see what can happen. And it works. After a couple different things, he says the incantation prayer, whatever the canticle has, and he gets rid of the Cinder King's voice in her head. What do you guys think?
I didn't think too much about it. I took it at face value. I took it at face value of the Cinder King has created not... Zombies is absolutely the wrong word, but it's kind of the one coming to mind. He's sucking the soul out of people, leaving still an operating shell and kind of replacing it with a simplified down soul that has a direct connection to him, and he can just speak directly to them all and give them directions. And they're so desiccated that they don't even have a will anymore. They just want to fight, and they have his voice in their head, so they fight whatever he points them towards. Yeah. So tracking all of that, does it make sense in our Cosmere magical world that Nomad can suck out part of the soul there that has the connection to the Cinder King? Sure.
Mm-hmm. What about the shades?
Ah, yes.
So last episode, when Nomad learns that these are Threnodites, he immediately starts looking over his shoulder and is like, okay, where are the shades? And Auxiliary is like, it's got a rotating sun. They probably just don't exist around here. It turns out they do, and they're engineers in a lab that can make you whatever you want. Who had that on their bingo board?
This part is so weird. I thought I was tracking. Like, I was following the plant. We're getting complicated. We got all this crazy stuff, terms getting thrown around, breaths, Investiture, connection, intent, the whole nine yards. But I thought I was holding with it until he walks up to the giant jar full of shades and they 3D print him some parts for his rocket. Like,
yes, they do.
Paul, if you want to look at some art, if you need some help, go look at this one, because there's a picture of this scene of the jar of shades and him holding up the schematics to it. Page 202. Helpful for me to see what was going on, but this is trippy. This is no questions asked. What the heck is going on?
I did see this, and I was like, okay, so I listened to the book, you know, our chapters, then I went back and looked at the pictures, and when I looked at that, I was still like, what? I was pretty confused still. That's why this is maybe the most, maybe ever since we've read some Stormlight stuff back in the start of this podcast, this is the most I'm like, I've really needed this group just to piece together what is happening. Like, this is a challenge. This is wild. Especially, like I said, I think for the first time that's not necessary to do so, I think I might be switching to reading the physical book just to try and keep better track of what all is going on here, because Trevor, you mentioned a bingo card. If you got bingo with trying to predict what was happening in this story, it's just craziness, you know?
That'd be a really good content piece. We preemptively make our bingo cards for Wind and Truth, and then as we go through, we try to get...
I think that's a really good idea. I have a running list of like random off-topic predictions I think are going to happen for Wind and Truth, which we'll talk about another time. But just like things I think we're going to see. Like, just random little tidbits. I think we'll randomly see this character do this or this scenario or whatever. You know, I think that's actually a really good idea. Let's hold on to that.
Yeah, I want to go make a bingo card now.
Yeah.
Anyway. So they 3D print him some of his rockets, and they can, as long as you understand it, they can understand it and then print it. And Auxiliary makes the argument, okay, well, arguably what we're doing is more crazy than what they're doing, because you have to give them physical metal and then they can print it. So yeah, there you go. When I read this for the first time last year, I had the same exact reaction that you guys are having of like, what? What am I reading? What? So yeah, anyway.
It doesn't seem to break any laws. I'll say that much. Everything that's happening there, we've got so many different magic systems and things going on. Auxiliary statement initially at face value, I buy. Like, is it really that crazy? I mean, we've got a lot of other crazy stuff going on, but just the initial take of how surprising, I guess, that is, or how much I don't understand about what's going on there. Like, are the shades creating a connection to Nomad so that they understand his intent, and then they have to bond with the metal that's coming in and then reshape the metal? And then why are they even doing this? Is there a motive for them? Like, the complexity of what could potentially be going on here just seems astronomical. Feasible in the Cosmere physics that we know so far? Sure. But yeah, just so out there that when I read it, I was floored, confused.
After I read it, I thought, okay, when is this ship going to crash and topple over? That was my thought of, you know, we've got crashing ships left and right. When is this one going to break open and you release all the ancestors on your enemy? Oopsies.
I suppose that could happen, you know. Could go on the bingo card for this story, as we were talking about.
All right. Anything else in this episode that we didn't touch on? I mean, I'm sure there's plenty, but
I feel very relieved that we got to talk about the Dawn Shards, and that we, I guess, know as much as we do know. I think it's the first time I've gotten to really like put, like, I've had a couple little random puzzle pieces out of like 100-piece puzzle or whatever. I had like 3 pieces and they were completely unrelated. And now it's like, okay, we have a little section, you know, we've got the border done or something like that of our puzzle. And so I feel a bit relieved, but I obviously still have many questions that come up. I'm really hoping that maybe we get to see something in Stormlight 5 with Risen, just a hint maybe. I think at the start of this episode, I was like, No, we're not going to see any of this in Stormlight. I'm hoping we do now. I think I need answers. So.
Well, I actually do want to talk about this. Last week we talked about, is Brandon Sanderson going too far? And we talked about it within the context of the story. I like it. This is what I said. And in Stormlight, I don't. I am worried that you're going to have to know this for Stormlight 5. I'm worried that you're going to have to know Dawn Shard mechanics for the Contest of Champions. And if that is true, I think that is a mistake. I think being required to read this and have all the prerequisites of this book for Wind and Truth, I think is a mistake. I hope that's not the case. I really hope I hope we get as little Dawn Shard as possible in Wind and Truth.
Or I'm with you. I do think that would be a mistake. I think Brandon knows that. I think what we've seen so far, that there's no way he makes that mistake. I think that would be a big one. It would create a major roadblock in the entire Cosmere for a good chunk of the more casual readers. He's not going to make that mistake. Right. I think there's easy ways to work around it. I think what we just talked about it. Dawn Shards may apparently have different rules. We could see Dawn Shards in Wind and Truth, and they just be completely different Dawn Shards with different rules that are going to get explained to us in Wind and Truth. And are you going to have a richer understanding of that, knowing about this Dawn Shard that Nomad and Sigzil and Hoid have wielded? Yes. But are you going to need that? I'll be pretty shocked if you need that information going into Wind and Truth.
I absolutely agree. I agree with exactly what you're saying, Trevor. I don't think it should be a requirement. I'm hoping maybe we'll get an interlude or some scene with Rissen that we get the subtle hint and a nod and a wink of maybe what the parameters of her Dawn Shard are. That's what I'm hoping for, but honestly, I could see that not being the case, being, you know, so far those concepts have been tucked away in the novellas and things like that, so I expect that's how it may continue. But, yeah.
It's definitely giving me an understanding of Dawn Shards as far more destructive than I would have guessed. Like, Nomad and Hoid were the wielders of the Dawn Shard, and they seem to have come away not okay.
And theirs is specifically coded for not violence.
Yes, exactly. So now, whereas before I was just thinking, oh, cool, Risen has a superpowered Dawn Shard. I wonder when that's going to become relevant. Now I'm shifting gears to, is Risen okay? Has someone gone and checked in on her in a while?
Yeah.
There's one last thing I want to say about Dawn Shards. One last thing. So we get the confirmation here that these Dawn Shards were used to destroy God, to destroy Adonalsium.
Yes.
Adonalsium is the one thing that we can look at in the Cosmere and be like, it's sort of always been there, I guess, right? Like, whatever, predating history of Hoid, whatever, you know. Let's say, for the purposes of this, let's say.
Oversimplifying, yes, I agree with you.
Yes. Okay, so since then, the entities in our stories that have, quote unquote, always been around are the shards of Adonalsium. You know, you see Honor, you see Odium, you know, so on and so forth. Are the Dawn Shards something that were, like, crafted or created at some point? Or do they, like, maybe predate or date back with Adonalsium or something like that and were obtained and wielded against Adonalsium? There's obviously a lot that I don't know with this and really have to speculate. But I'm wondering, are these like completely on another playing field than even the shards of Adonalsium that we've seen in all of our stories, you know? Or not? Is this something that because of the shattering of Adonalsium, they became like different? Obviously, these are questions that I don't think we will have answers to, But that's my thought. That's the kind of crazy thing to me, because I haven't thought of anything potentially pre-Aedron Alsium or pre the Shattering. So I'm just very intrigued, and my mind is racing.
Just to add a thought to your pile of crazy thoughts that we can't answer yet. Remember back to the book we just finished, Tress. And this isn't is not a major spoiler for Tress, but it's one of the little Hoidisms buried within it. Do you remember when Hoid made an offhand mention during a conversation where he heavily implies that the motive for killing Aedron Alsium was for Aedron Alsium's good?
Well, I'm going to make a decision for you and take away that choice is like the line, right? Or are we talking about two different lines?
No, I think we're talking about the same. It's
so it's Huck. More spoilers for Tress. Huck throws all the food out of the ship, and Tress asks him why, and Huck says, because I can't let you go through with this. And that's when Hoid goes off on his little tangent of like, yes, I'm going to make your own decision for you because I don't trust you to make the right one. And I've said that before with 16 other people. That's the quote.
Yes. Take that now in context with the whole, why were the Dawn Shards created? Who had them? What was the purpose? Are they pre-Aedron Alsium? Are they post-Aedron Alsium? I don't know the answers. I just think it's another piece in that puzzle. I've got two quick things to close out the episode for you guys. I know we're going long, but this is a discuss it a lot kind of a book for sure. First one, super quick. I just want to appreciate the engineering happening in these chapters. Super fun as an engineer to watch Nomad get excited about designing and building and testing his rockets, where you put a bunch of time into a design that you're passionate about. And there's nothing better than that feeling of going to the test site and going, this thing is actually going to explode and it's going to be awesome. Let's do it. There's basically a line where Nomad says that. And it's like, yes, that is exactly what it feels like to be an engineer designing your first parts. Second thing, which I do want your guys' thoughts on this part too. There's a moment in chapter 19 that I really liked quite a bit. They've just gotten back from the encounter with the Cinder King and being chased and attacked by all his people. And Nomad is like laying on the floor for some reason, and the rest of them are all having like a little powwow. And Nomad is thinking, oh man, this is the end of it. They're all realizing their predicament. They're like, we are out of power. We did not find the bunker we were looking for. We're screwed. We're just all going to die. And they're talking about, oh, well, do we surrender to the Cinder King? And Nomad is thinking, oh, okay, here it comes. I need to pop up. I need to give a big old speech. I need to inspire everyone here. And then he listens, and the people do that themselves. They don't need him to come in and give a big inspiring speech about not giving into evil and trying everything we can until the last breath, because they just already have this innate defiance, this innate resolution within them. And the impact this has on Nomad is pretty cool. We talked before about how Nomad is not who he used to be, and he keeps kind of reminiscing back to, oh, if I was the old person I was. This is another moment where I think he gets inspired by them. That the quote in the chapter is, he's infected by their air of intoxicating defiance. And I thought that was really cool and relatable too. Have you ever been around someone who's really passionate about something? Like really feels strongly, they believe in something so much. You can't help but be a little bit intoxicated by that. You are drawn to other people who are passionate about something. And that's what Nomad is experiencing here. I've definitely felt that before. It's a relatable moment for sure.
Well, that's how this podcast started. I wouldn't shut up about books. And you guys are like, okay, fine.
Yep. You sucked us in with your intoxicating obsession with cool stories.
Yes, I also saw that moment and thought it was good. Anything else, gentlemen?
I think that sums it up for me.
All right. We will be in... Hold on. 26 through 40 for next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Once more, onto the breach.
Ciao.